The Dave Damaschek Football Program. Available on Apple Podcasts and at NFL.com/DDFP. Now here's your host, Dave Damaschek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Damaschek. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. I report to you from my second son's bedroom right now because I am sequestered like the rest of America, like the rest of society is. Welcome to the Dave Damaschek Football Program. Joined as usual these days by our iron quartet here, starting off with the voice of the Los Angeles Chargers, awaiting to find out who will be their starting quarterback. I don't know what else he's doing with himself, really. I guess that's his chief focus right now. It's Matt Money Smith. What's the poop, fella?
Well, I can't help but think that we're like the 1970s Red Sox, right? It's four guys, four houses. You know, it's just kind of the way we got to do this. I'm going to be honest. I kind of like having my distance away from you guys. It's nice just to see you. Nice.
It has been a good opportunity to look into how other people live. It's we talked about a couple of weeks ago there. Then also our representative of the Miami Dolphins all the way from London, England. Here he is, everybody. It's Handsome Hank. What's happening with you, Handsome?
Hi, Dave. I'm good. Thank you.
Look at you. Still supporting the brand. Place.
Yeah. You know what? I found this. Let me show you this. I got this in 1995.
It's a Dolphins pullover sweatshirt.
It's a pullover. No, it's a hoodie as well. It's authentic.
That's
like
a felt patch, right? That's not an iron. That looks.
It's no. It's definitely attached. It's well attached.
That's nice. Not iron. And then the Dolphins.
Yeah, the old font, the old script.
Oh, look at that! That's
remember. Remember a few years ago when the biggest uniform related problem we had was that they took the helmet off of the Miami Dolphin, you know?
Right. Didn't care about safety.
This one's staying safe.
Simpler days. We'll have talk coming up for you. Go ahead, money.
Yes. You know, I know we're going to have actual scheduled uniform talk, but would love to know. I mean, you grew up in Pittsburgh, Dave, Eddie there in New York, me, Chicago, Hank, of course, the UK, and you have your dedicated teams in your neighborhood. I mean, Chicago, Bears, Cubs, Bulls, Blackhawks, New York, obviously, and Pittsburgh. What was the first? Do you remember the first non-local team that you sported because you just liked the way it looked?
Oh, that's a great question. Let's ponder that. I need a moment to gather myself. And that also allows me very quickly to say hello to the fourth member of this podcast. It's Eddie Spaghetti. Or is that John Starks with the orange headband on? He's got literally the Knickerbockers mid-90s road jersey on and an orange headband to boot. Yeah. Looking good, Spaghetti.
The hair is growing way too long, so I have the little bandana on matching the Starks jersey. I've just been rotating between Ewing and Starks this week when I'm sitting at home. It's my work attire is gym shorts and basketball jerseys. And to answer Monty's question, it was another basketball jersey. It was the Chicago Bulls. Michael Jordan was my first non-Knicks. I was growing up, I was a humongous basketball fan first because I played, and I was a Knicks fan. But, I mean, Jordan, I think everyone growing up in, like, I guess around 96, 7, 8-ish was, you know, the Bulls were the best. So I think I had a white and a red Jordan jersey.
And that's funny. So you hand it to me and it's like a self-congratulatory session because I'm going to reach up here. No, hold on. Here to Dave and say my first ever, I loved the Pirates flat tops. And I bought one of those flat pirate caps with the stripes on the side because I love those late 70s Pittsburgh teams. And Kent Tekulve with all the stars. And you just posted a photo of him on your Twitter feed there, Dave. That is, I think I was probably in like maybe second grade when I got that. It was way too big for me because I got a tiny head. But I do recall that being like my first non-Chicago-based sporting gear.
How funny is that? Because and by the way, you know what people don't know about those flat top Pirates hats, the pillbox hats or whatever you want to call them?
Right.
They're made famous by Pop Stargell, the first baseman in the Hall of Famer, the 1979 World Series MVP. You know, it's a weird little footnote about number eight there, Pop Stargell. He was only co-MVP in 1979. Quick bit of trivia. Can anybody name who he shared that 79 NL MVP with? Handsome Hank, Eddie Spaghetti, you have zero chance. You have zero chance of getting it.
So, 79 NL, someone on the Reds.
I would say Joe Morgan.
Yeah.
It's a great guess. No, he did wear a red cap. I will say
he wore a red cap. All right. So Pete Rose.
Cardinals is correct.
Cardinals. So that would be.
He went on to win a World Series, but not right. with the Cardinals. Well, like, he would have won a World Series. Wait, what do you have? Was he?
Who was good then? Gibson?
It played the same position.
First baseman for the Cardinals. Who am I not thinking of? Now I'm thinking it's Cardinals World Series and Hal Morris is in my brain.
Made famous by Keith Seinfeld. It was Keith Hernandez.
Keith Hernandez. Oh,
you just looked that up, huh? There you go. Good for you. Well done.
By the way, Keith,
weird name for a baby of the day. I've just anointed that. Also, not that savory for a grown up either. When you think about it, Keith. No.
See, the thing though, Dave, is your weird name for a baby is it's not fair. It's a different time, you know. Keith had its moment. You know, Keith had its moment in the late '60s, early '70s there when it was basically like today's Riley. You know, that's kind of what Keith was, you know, back there in the late, you know, I think the three of us probably know some Keiths out there. And I would say Eddie probably knows none.
Well, music would be rock and roll.
Keith Richards.
Significantly, if you start doing that. And the Kinks too, right?
Well, you had Ray Davies and you had Dave Davies.
No Keith with the brothers there. But I have, by the way, been listening to a fair amount of Kinks. I know Matt Money Smith is a connoisseur of the Kinks, and they're sort of the forgotten British band with the Beatles and Rolling Stones. And I maybe it's a little bit of a hipster take, but are you partial to the Kinks over the Beatles or the... No. For the Stones ultimately?
No, I'm not. I don't feel the need to be super cool. The Kinks are great. Love the Kinks. Highly recommend people investigate the Kinks, but the Beatles are the freaking Beatles and the Stones are the Stones, Zeppelin. You know, I mean, I appreciate all of those. Those great look. Longevity is one of the toughest things, as anyone that listens to Pearl Jam can attest. You hear 10 and then you hear the rest of that crap they put out and it's like, wow, they couldn't do it. And, and bands like, you know, Zeppelin and
I'm all for a band changing its sound and progressing and everything else. But they are pretty far afield. I mean, they've been making music for 30 years, not to turn this into another Pearl Jam conversation, but the tracks that you've posted. Posted Spaghetti and other people are putting up there. It's like, this is Pearl Jam. I don't, and I'm fine with it if it sounds great. I just don't necessarily love it. Are you hip with this? You like this new sound they got going?
Oh yeah, I love it.
Every day, man.
They've been having a new sound. They've been updating their sound constantly. I mean, their fourth album was a different sound. That's why people hated No Code at the time in 96.
That's why I tuned out around 94. But anyhow, the pillbox hats were worn, or they first made the scene in Major League Baseball in, I believe, in 1976 to honor the nation's bicentennial. And then the Buccos held on to them. Like, I think the Rangers wore them for a little bit longer than some other teams did, but I'm pretty sure that every team sported them for at least a game or something like that.
I did not know that.
I think that's true. I guess somebody can go online and easily.
The photos of Kenta Colby with that freaking submariner, the tinted prescription glasses. It is just. You want a guy that was a stud in the 1970s, and you're like, really? That guy was a star? It's like, yeah, check out old Kent to Colby.
We've talked about the difference that if you fell into a coma at the start of the 21st century and you just woke up now, what would be the differences between sports, 20 years later? And I'll tell you, they had on Major League, on MLB Network the other day, like you say, Money, they had the 1979 World Series on. I went to one of those games. And what I remember about that was game four of that game. It was the last one that the Buccos lost, and they won the last three to claim the series from the O's. But we were sitting behind first base line in Three River Stadium. I'm sorry, behind home plate. way up high in old Three River Stadium, very high up looking down. And Pop Stargell fouled one straight back.
The ball flew up. It was coming down right at me. And if nobody touched it, it would have hit me squarely on top of the head. It would have been a perfect shot to my skull. And the old man went up to get it. And some drunk guy reached up over him and wrestled it away from him. It was the first time I saw my father as mortal, you know? Was it? I mean, we could have had a World Series ball. But anyway, the Bucks lost from that.
Stargell, no less.
But the thing that stands out is, I mean, it's striking. Obviously, we know this. We've watched Barry Bonds and others sort of artificially inflate themselves. But it's pretty striking when you see, I mean, they're basically, they look like you, Matt Money Smith, which is to say very slight, like just, wow. Yeah.
Well, they're not really big guys.
You're a professional athlete? You don't look like one. Or they look like Eddie Spaghetti, which is to say like Pop Stargell, which is to say obese.
Hey, he's a Hall of Famer. I'll take it.
Plus, no sports goggles. I think that Kareem was the first high-profile sports guy. Then Eric Dickerson started to wear his and James Worthy.
Worthy. Horace Grant. Well, actually, Kurt Rambis, remember, had the croquis. So he just went, hey, I'm wearing my freaking prescription glasses, but I'm going to put this super cool piece of fabric on the back of them. Yeah, we would actually have tape in the middle of them. It was awesome.
Greasy had those as well.
Yes. Yeah, right. Greasy wore basically bifocals out there.
Just wore his glasses.
Yeah, he looks – I think he's the most ridiculous. But in his defense, that was the order of the day. Tim Foley at shortstop for the Pirates also had ridiculous ones, and he had a very cheesy mustache to boot. So pedestrian bodies, dad mustaches, and dad bods ruled Major League Baseball back in
the
day.
Remember Chris Sabo's glasses? That guy had a hell of a pair of specs over there in the hot corner. What was your cap, by the way, or what was your piece of gear?
I'm sorry. Yes, I got off track there.
That never happened. Was
well in Chicago. So two Chicago stories for you. First of all, what we could to round out the shades conversation on July 4th, 1994, I was out in the bleachers, the right field side in Wrigley Field, and celebrating our nation's birthday. And my friends and I were drinking the old styles as usual and otherwise out there in the stands having a gay time. And yeah, there you are. The old style hat on Matt Money Smith. It's all coming together today. Serendipity abounds in a low grade way, but still it's there. Right. So out in left field, out in right field that day was Colorado Rockies outfielder Dante Bichette. And we had with us a giant American flag. Well, it's because it was the nation's birthday. After all, I say I don't know why we had it, because I wouldn't necessarily hold us up as the greatest patriots in American history. But anyhow, which isn't to say that we're traitors to the country either. Anyhow, that's neither here nor there. But I remember we sang a series of American songs to Dante Bichette, including "You're a Yankee Doodle Dandy," and we modified the lyrics. And he would turn around and he would strum his finger like a conductor
the orchestra,
as we were. And then when the game resumed, he literally would get down into the outfielder's crouch, you know, that you always see with the hands on the knees and all that. But he put his non-gloved hand behind his back and continued to orchestrate the pitches were coming in. And then we threw down onto the field some, hey, Dante, trade glasses with us, because he had the croquis thing, the thing that held them on, like, you know what those look like, the outfielders, to make sure that their glasses don't fall off. We said, hey, let's trade glasses. And so one of my friends had some cheesy neon green glasses. You know, I don't know why, because he was drunk or whatever and thought it was funny to wear them. And he threw them down onto the field. And in the game, Dante Bichette picks them up and puts them on and starts walking around like he's blind or drunk, like starts like in the outfield, walking around, stammering around like half a Frankenstein out in the outfield, jagging around out there like, hey, man, you're getting paid probably like $600,000 for this game, pal. You should really pay attention a little bit. But it was just magical.
Right. Engage the fans. They'll have a story forever.
out there. I mean, that was the home of yeah. those little moments. But anyway, what we can maybe get back to those in a little bit. I do. Well, I will say Pittsburgh Pirates, Andy Van Slyke once at the end of the half inning was good. The fans kept saying, as they always do to the visiting, throw the ball into the stands. And he required that everybody get up and give him a standing ovation. And then once they did, then he gave them the ball. Charming, charming stuff from Van Slyke. But to answer your question, finally, Money, it was, in fact, this Pittsburgh guy loved the Chicago Blackhawks sweater, and specifically the red Blackhawks sweater. And I always loved the mass of 80s goalie Murray Bannerman, a weird name.
I love Murray.
Yeah, a very weird name for a – I think my microphone's been out this whole time, but anyway.
No, it's fine. That sounds good.
The Murray Bannerman had that weird kabuki mask. Remember yes. that thing?
It was very creepy. Absolutely.
It would have been haunting to try and score. If you're a sharpshooter coming down on a breakaway and all of a sudden you look up at who's trying to stop you, I would have just the puck would have flown off my stick and as I peed down my my skated leg. I had a red sweater,
I should say.
Red sweater, Murray Bannerman. Nice. Handsome Hank, how say you?
There wasn't a hometown team, but I was a Dolphins fan, but I loved the Detroit Lions get up. So I at one stage bought some Lions gear, t-shirts. I don't think it went as far as a jersey, but I liked the Lions generally. And then obviously cricket is my second love. And as you know, everyone wears white. So you could very easily switch teams and allegiances. You would be wearing exactly the same outfit, regardless of who you were supporting.
Now help me with this, Hank, because I shared, I think about a month ago, or maybe it's a little bit longer, that I've been watching the test.
You were, yeah.
And they're talking about, you know, you wear your green baggy hat or whatever it is, that's their symbol. But
yep.
they said, you know, how important that is. So what are they doing when they're not playing for the national team? Is there an international professional league? Is there a professional league specifically? Like, how does professional cricket work?
Well, cricket, because if you're in the national team, it's played year round because it's summer somewhere that cricket is being played. So
that's teams, your job. You're not on, yeah, you're so not you, on like a, okay.
You play for a local club team a little bit, but more and more now because it is year round, you will, you know, if during the winter in the Northern Hemisphere, you would go and play, you would tour the Southern Hemisphere and play international cricket there. Typically at the start or end of a cricket season, your local cricket season, the local players might wind up playing, you know, two or three games for the teams they originally kind of came through.
So then what did you wear? Like what jersey, what were you wearing?
You would wear white still, but you would wear
your
club. Then your club would have it's a different cap. But that, I mean, no fan would wear that. That's just the players themselves that would wear it.
And the caps, for people that have never seen them, basically look like the cap that Ty Cobb wore.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Roger Staubach wore. Like they're wearing them out there.
Or Greg exactly. LeMond, then, really. It looks much more like what more suitable for a Tour de France guy, right?
Exactly. I mean, they're the same hats, I guess, that they wore 100 years ago is exactly. kind of the sense I get.
And then to mark, you know, to the extent that when you first play for your national team, it's called you get your cap.
Right.
And so then your appearances for your national team are counted by how many caps you have. So you if you've played 100 times for Australia, you have 100 caps. You'd only ever wear the same one. You know, there's obviously tradition of like you would wear that first one, so it's super sweaty, stinky cap that you'd
and
have.
And that carries over to soccer, where you hear about guys
exactly.
for the national team.
Yeah,
then that's thing. Where. Look at that. How about that little fun fact? It came
just trying to educate it. Money. That's what you know. Again, this is why I came to America was to educate you heathen.
Look at that. When you see them, like Eric Winalda has 115 caps for the national team. That is a cricket term. How about that?
There you go. Well, I guess
is it's it, sports, so. And maybe, you know, everybody's trying to dig in. Obviously, everybody's showing old games and they're born anew. But it's hard to kind of suspend, you know, the end of the book. But with cricket, maybe we should all just embrace cricket and watch those games. We have no information.
No idea.
You could just watch those.
Yeah, yeah. That's, I mean, it's a good idea. How did you get on with the rest of that series, Money? Did you enjoy the story that was being told?
Here's what I think. Like when I first started watching that F1 series on Netflix, I then went to watch F1 races and realized that they're really not very exciting. Based on where you are slotted is probably where you're going to finish unless you really screw it up. Or, and I think it's why a lot of people like this young racer, Max Verstappen, because he's freaking crazy. And he's like the only guy that makes a ton of moves. Basically, Lewis Hamilton wins the pole and he wins the F1 race is kind of how that thing goes. So I think for cricket, I'm like, okay, if I try to apply this to actually watching the sport, and in the Amazon Prime show, they're on like, all right, here's day one. And oh, this guy was batting for 9 hours. And here's day four. I'm like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to be watching much of it.
Maybe just the highlights.
I'm just going to take this package program and probably limit it to that.
Yeah, fair enough.
Maybe, you know what? We have nothing but time on our hands. And I hate to be the vapid cynic who, you know, it's like when you walk up to the craps table and you're like, it's too much. I don't understand what's happening here. But it only takes 20 minutes to figure things out. Why don't you give us like a 4-hour tutorial on the ins and outs of cricket, and then we'll all be better as a nation going forward. That, you know what?
Okay.
We'll skip
everyone
that.
Go to the bathroom. We'll start in 5 minutes.
Right.
All right. Let's go around the wheel here, and we'll start with you now, Handsome. Your thumbnail reaction to, first of all, two NFC South teams have new uniforms. Let's start with the more recent unveiling, the Atlanta Falcons.
Well, first of all, so that unveiling was scheduled for April 14th, so a week yesterday, but the uniforms leaked on social media, so they had to bring forward that that announcement, and it was rushed out today. Look, they unveiled four uniforms, and I guess they can be kind of put together in any kind of configuration, if you see what I mean. Obviously, like the throwback, the all black one, I think that's a classic one, although much better with the red helmet.
Throwback, right? They keep saying that's a throw. It's not a throwback.
It's a throwback to something, but it's not the. You didn't throw it the whole way, but you could have thrown it further back.
Yeah,
it's a throwback to Jerry Glanville. It's a throwback to Jerry Glanville, who screwed up a really great uniform because he thought it would be cool for them to wear black.
Well, Deion's got to wear that too because he's the one who's associated with it.
Yes,
I don't understand the fondness for that look. It basically is the Raiders or the Houston Gamblers. It's the Oakland Raiders with some red trim mixed in.
Right.
I think people make too much, but it's the best of a sorry lot.
It's the best,
so that's why
it's
people
the best
like
of the lot. Right. Exactly. I think that the white ones kind of, you know, they could grow on me when you see them against another team. I think they, you know, that could be a decent look. I don't like the red piping on the black ones. And I especially don't like the gradient. Is that what you call it? Like gradient,
yeah,
red into black. But just, we don't need that. There's no requirement
anywhere
for that in sports. It looks like it was designed by someone who had run out of ideas.
It's reminiscent of arguably the worst, at least in the conversation, for the worst basketball uniform ever, and the Dikembe Mutombo era Atlanta Hawks, where they went from red to navy with that hawk in the middle and its elongated wings. They really are arguably that they are in that conversation as worst basketball uniform ever, but it's the exact same color combo. And I'm very curious as to why they thought it was wise to bring that when they saw what a colossal failure it was for their basketball team right there in the same time.
Right. And I don't think we've had an idea of what they're going to be wearing when they've just sort of unveiled all of this, but I don't get a sense of like what's number one, what's number two.
Right.
This one we're going to use only on like every Thursday night football game every other year or something. That would be fine. Then we can forget about it there, but they need to make some good decisions on that front.
It's also, it feels to me a little bit like just because you can do something doesn't mean you have to do it. And that, like, yeah, the gradient one, that red one, and, you know, the weird stripe that extends. The Broncos are the ones responsible for bringing this into our lives, is the stripe that extends up past the pants and onto the jersey.
Yeah, from the armpit down.
Armpit to the ankle. Yeah. Don't like it.
That was a bad invention. But things like that gradient one, it's kind of like you mentioned Led Zeppelin, Money. John Bonham one of the all-time great drummers, but I also don't need the self-indulgent drum solo for 10 minutes. You know, it's like, yeah, all right, great. Are you, hey, uniform designer, I know that you like, oh, it's so boring to just make a red jersey with the two stripes around the arms. I want to do something different. Yeah, listen, this ain't for you, friend. This is for people to walk around town to look at. We have to look at this for 3.5 hours every Sunday. And this is what you've done to our eyeballs. No, thank you. You know, they're really bad. And then again, the thing also that that vexes me with these things is because most NFL teams have a better option in the closet. Why couldn't they just play off of? I know, my handsome, you say that that's a throwback, the all black, but it's uninspired at best.
No. Look, they did wear, I think for a couple of games, maybe 2-3 years ago, they wore that uniform, that black jersey, but they wore it with the red helmet, and it looks fantastic. The red helmet just sets it the whole thing off. I completely agree with you. Like the black all the way through, I'm just saying it's the best of a bad bunch.
But I actually kind of like
that
one.
They put the red helmet out there. I don't dislike it. I'm just saying that with a red helmet on, I'd be the
right.
The red helmet was classic.
Yeah, no, I think you hit it. It's when you look at the four of them together, it's the only one that you would say, okay, that can work. The rest of them, it's like, no thanks. I get it. You want to be cool, but the font is terrible. The number font especially is really bad. And you can see that when it is juxtaposed against the classic numeral font. You want to do ATL instead of Atlanta, that's fine. You know, whatever. I get it.
But you don't need to do ATL.
Right.
We all know that jerk about Cleveland.
Right.
I just want to say, with whether it's on Twitter or on emails or otherwise, everybody has seen the jerk out there who plays with the fonts a little bit too much. You know, like, just settle down. Just go with those numbers are like, why? They're just some nice standard numbers. Why did you have to do that? That weirdo giant block bony looking, I don't even know what that is. It really is. It's annoying to me. And then the Buccaneers,
wildly disappointing. I think totally disappointing. But look, we're old, right? We have, I think, an appreciation for the creamsicle that maybe other kids can't quite understand. But, you know, there was something very cool about orange, you know, specifically bright orange, white, and like a mustard yellow. It just worked and it looked cool out there. Go ahead, Hank.
Well, at the time, did it really? Like, I think you claim not to be a hipster, money, but you definitely are. And I feel like that's a hipster response. But if I'd asked you the same question in 1984, when Vinny Testaverde, or whatever year that was, 1986, I guess he came out, but would you have said the same thing? In retrospect, certainly it looks fantastic. I don't think everyone at the time embraced it quite to the same extent. Partly because of how bad that team was.
And perhaps I'm reinventing history. I don't know. But I, you know, back then when it was the Central, I always liked that. I felt like it was the most unique division for uniforms. You had green and gold of Green Bay. You had purple in Minnesota. You had orange in Tampa. And, you know, you had obviously Detroit had the blue, and then the Bears had the navy and the orange. There was something about them. I was like, it's kind of cool. You know, here's this Florida team with these wacky. I just always assumed it was like, down there in Florida, you know, with the sun, and they got the orange. And there was something about it in that particular division that they wore those uniforms. I always thought it was kind of cool.
Probably Young Money as well was a bit like, well, we always beat them 45-3.
Yeah, there was that too.
So it's cool.
That is one of the great numbers in sports history, is how many years. I don't remember what it is even off the top of my head, but I mean, it wasn't 6 years. It was like 20 years at least, I think, that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers didn't win a game in a temperature lower than 40 degrees Fahrenheit.
Right.
I mean, literally, right? Wasn't it 20 years after their inception before they finally won a road game? When it was cold outside. But you're exactly right, Money, that's why I like the Buccaneers, and that's why I like the Dolphins get-ups, is because they are regionally specific. The Cleveland Browns, have great uniforms. If you put them on in Tampa Bay, they wouldn't look right. But brown and orange, Rust Belt, perfect. Yeah, well done. And in fact, that's also why – the Seahawks uniforms in any of the incarnations kind of have worked, because the navy and green, or the royal blue and green, those seem like, yeah, that seems like Pacific Northwest to me. Or is it the chicken or the egg? Have I come to associate those colors with, because of what the Seattle Seahawks have done?
Well, it's interesting, right? Because as you said, I think like they should be like a forest green and brown, because if you ever go, you see all the evergreens. I mean, when you drive down the freeways in Washington State or Oregon, I mean, it is just 200 foot tall evergreens for as far as the eye can see. It always, like, for whatever reason, I always thought the Eagles should, and they are some of the best uniforms in any sport, but like they should be red, white, and blue, right? I mean, Philadelphia is kind of the birthplace of our nation. They have every right to claim it as Massachusetts does, if not more. So like, I think if it were, and same thing, I guess, to some degree with DC and all, but whatever, now I'm going too far down this rabbit hole.
Well, the bottom line is, I will say, it's easy to express disappointment about new uniforms. Always people always, nobody ever likes anything new, but the all dark gray, or whatever you call it, pewter of the Buccaneers, those are nice. Those have a chance. Those have a chance to be pretty good. I'll need to see them out on the field, as always, before I can render a final verdict. But the other news from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers is, of course, that that their quarterback, their new QB, is making the rounds. First of all, Jameis apparently says this morning he's flattered because it took Tom Brady the GOAT to replace him.
such a strange opinion.
One way to look at it.
Yeah. How'd that hit your ear there, handsome?
Well, just like, I mean, no. by the same token, do you think that Jarrett Stidham right now is like, hey, well, I guess they couldn't do better than me to replace Tom Brady? That doesn't work. That's not how the world works. You were bad. Your team didn't want to re-sign you, despite the fact you were the first overall pick. Don't try to make it into some kind of, well, the only way they could get better than me is to get the actual GOAT.
Money, how say you on this? We've kind of talked around this, and you've kind of been leading for the Chargers, at least the bandwagon that Jameis would make more sense there if you draft, you know, if you then bring in a young QB, that would make better sense over the next couple of few years than Cam, who's going to have a different hit on the cap and all that kind of stuff. And it does make some sense. But 4 years from now, who is perceived, who's more esteemed in pro football? Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston, or neither of the above? They're both just backups for the rest of their lives.
See, I just have that damn bias of watching those guys, you know, and just feeling like, I mean, you know, Marcus had what? Mario, I hate calling them by their first name. Mariota had what? Five different offensive coordinators. I think through the course of his career, he had, Jameis, I think he just got a new head coach that has a philosophy of risking the football and pushing it all over the place. And Jameis has always been a guy that's thought his ability and arm talent is able to put a ball and fit it in anywhere. So I think you're going to get that kind of outlier season that we've never seen before, right? 5,000 yards and 30 touchdowns, but 30 picks. I think both of them still have a chance. You know, and I feel confident that Mariota can thrive with John Gruden, with that offense, you know, with that offensive line. If in fact, let's say they get CeeDee Lamb or Jerry Jeudy there in the first round, they have Darren Waller, they have Tyrell Williams, obviously with Jacobs at back, there's all of it there for him. So I won't be surprised at all if Mariota, much like Tannehill, ends up playing really well this year, gets a 3 or 4 year deal, and the Raiders, you know, end up being a lot better at that position than they were the 3 years prior. As for Winston, you know, it just seems like people I talk to keep bringing up the same thing. And that's just like, man, it's so hard to get over those turnovers. You know, it's really, really hard to let him go. And I keep saying, well, go back and watch his junior year in college. And my God, it was one of the great quarterbacking performances we'd ever seen. And what he was doing and how he was operating in offense. He looked like freaking Peyton Manning out there, just barking audibles at the line of scrimmage, running from under center in a huddle. And it's just hard for me to get past that like this guy with all of that talent, and you heard about, you know, the Wunderlich score, the scholarship to Stanford, the offer to Stanford when he was a junior, and just how bright he is and how much his teammates love him. that guy's not going to make it, that he's 26 years old and it's over for him. It's really hard for me to process that and not think if he lands in the right spot, he's still going to be not a good, but a great quarterback in the league.
A big thing that is gaining momentum on the banks of the Three Rivers, and I keep tabs on it digitally, of course, is this notion that the Steelers should go get Jameis Winston to be Roethlisberger's backup. The issue with that, yeah, that makes all the sense in the world. If you could add a high, I mean, that's a luxury if you said, yeah, our backup QB is the first overall pick from 5 years ago, and he won the Heisman Trophy and national title and all that stuff and all the stuff that you just mentioned there. The issue is that makes sense for the team if you can get him at the right price. But we talked about this before. I'm pretty convinced now that you're not going to see either Jameis or Cam do anything until things clarify through the draft, right? Why would you? I mean, if you're Jameis, and let's say, the Patriots say, hey, we'll give you $8 million a year to a short-term prove-it type deal, or you're the Chargers or the Steelers or whoever it is, Jags, come in, compete with Minshew. Until you see what any of those teams do in the draft, what incentive would Cam have to be like, look, the Patriots still don't have a QB. Now I'll target that team. Right. Now our agent can start working the phones for who has a reasonable spot. And if you're Jameis, going to a place where you know going in that the premise is that you're going to be a backup barring injury, why would he ever go to a place like that? Because I think – I'm with you, Money. He has a chance. Marcus Mariota is kind of this weird domino. It's a funny thing if he does end up getting the Raiders – taking over the Raiders gig at any point, either before the season or during the season, that it mirrors the way he got bumped out in Tennessee. But Jameis rightly should hold out for this, because we talk about QB saturation, but I do think that there are, like I say, the Chargers, I'm not convinced the Dolphins perceive themselves to be so close to being a finished product that they have to get, Tua, or make a move to try all this noise about the Bengals might move on from Tua. I mean, the Bengals might move on from Burrow because he hasn't fully embraced the idea of playing for that team. And they don't want to get Eli. The Dolphins, I think I think that'd be a great spot for the Dolphins, if they don't wind up with somebody, if they don't get one of those guys.
Is dead on. Let's just say that the Dolphins do trade up to get Joe Burrow, that they decide, you know what, we got five firsts in the next two drafts. We're going to give up three of them and we're going to go get Joe Burrow because the Bengals apparently like, and there's a reason why these things are out there. If they like Justin Herbert and the Dolphins are in love with Joe Burrow, then they jump up there and the Redskins are like, whoa, that's the price for moving up to get one of these guys. And then a team jumps the Chargers and gets Tua, and then maybe the Bengals then take, Herbert at number five, and maybe the Raiders jump into number four because they're in love with Jordan Love, or something like that. That could all happen. And if it does, then you're sitting there as, like you said, the Chargers, the Panthers, maybe even with Teddy Bridgewater, because that you could look at that contract as a 1 to 2 year deal. And they could be saying, okay, well, so let's say the Panthers move in front of them. You see what I'm getting at? Now you're the Chargers, and you're like, okay, maybe it does make sense for us to have Cam. We don't have Tua to sell tickets. We don't have Jordan Love and that live arm to get people excited. We do need Jameis. We do need Cam. We do need a quarterback with some box office viability. And I think the same goes with the Patriots. If they think Jordan Love's going to slip to them, and he doesn't, then yeah, then it makes sense to give Jameis that try. And I think you'll find a deflated market where you can, just like Teddy Bridgewater had when he signed that deal with the Saints. And look, he was able to parlay that into $60 million. So I won't be surprised at all if that's the way it all shakes out.
But if it didn't shake out like that, back to Dave's original point, I think the Steelers is a great landing spot. And Dave, while I agree it's a luxury, every day that goes by, to Money's point, it brings that market down and makes him more affordable. And so I think that Jameis, if it happened in May 1st, that he's still unemployed and is weighing up options, and the teams that really need a quarterback found their guy in the draft, then I don't think there's any better place for him to go. We've all should assume that Ben's got 1 or maybe 2 years left in him, depending on what happens with his return from injury. And then hopefully Jameis, to your point, money at the age of 27, 28, does get that opportunity to prove that he's got what it takes to still be a premier quarterback in the NFL.
I thought you were about to crack wise when you said way and all that kind of stuff. I thought you were every day that goes by is another day for number 7 to gain 7 more pounds or so. It would be funny if he came out like the late great Hefty Lefty by the time we saw him in fall of 2020.
Oh, God, yeah.
The thing I don't see, it really would be funny though, if a starting quarterback, if he really was like, all right, you want to see fat football America, I'm going to gain as much weight before the start of the season as I possibly can. That would be a great thing. And then if he comes out and plays great, he's like, look how great I am. I like it. It's like the Mickey, right. It's like the Mickey Mantle thing. Like people always regret, what if the Mick would have treated his body right? Like I choose to look at it the other way. He is a champion for those of us who enjoy a drink, who enjoy living, not just surviving. Look at what Mickey Mantle did. He went out and lived. He didn't live this bizarre, restrictive existence like Tom Brady. I hail it. Don't oh boy me. What do you get? Well, excuse me.
He's not a Steeler. You are fat shaming him to the nines, and you know it.
Look who's sequestering up on Mount Pius, Mount Money Smith.
Oh, you know I'm right. You know that you see those videos of Ben with that giant face and that enormous beard. You'd be like, that's your quarterback? That guy, he's too good to be a guard.
You forget, my favorite athlete of all time is Mario Lemieux, who famously had a two-pronged attack to get ready for the drop of the puck every year. He said, and these are quotes from him. One, he stopped eating the fries alongside his burger at lunch, one. And two, he put down the nails. He stopped smoking cigs. That was that was his preseason prep. Tom Brady, meantime, handsome, is on those Buccaneers, and he's brought his new way. Very sad. He said, you know, in tears, saying goodbye to everybody, which begs the question, then you could have just stayed, man. And I have no beef with Bill Belichick. I had no concern with him, and nothing but respect. And, you know, I think it's a poopy question using a different synonym for the word, the question to ask. You know, is it me or Belichick? It's both. I couldn't do his job and he couldn't do mine. Yeah, you don't get to control that narrative after you when you walk away from this team to play for another season or three, whatever it is, Tom Brady. Handsome, we've talked about it. Any update? Now the Howard Stern interview has gone down. Patriots fans have shed their tears. How say you? Tampa Bay Buccaneers, New England Patriots, Super Bowl 55. Who do you think? This is a question to be made. Patriots fans get offended when I ask this. This is not a decision that you can make intellectually. It's one that your heart will right. decide when that situation. But look into your crystal ball. Who do you think you'd be rooting for in that situation? Who do you think Patriots
100%, 120%
is what?
I would be rooting for the Bucs in that situation.
I'm saying if you're a Patriots,
I think that's still 120%. It's the Patriots.
That is definitely not true that 100% of Patriots
really
are going Patriots.
Would root against their own team just because Tom Brady? No.
Yeah.
No.
Yes. Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
I promise you. I mean, like, I promise you could put a poll on Twitter. Only Patriots fans answer this question. If the Patriots are in the Super Bowl against Tom Brady, who are you supporting? They're going to say the Patriots. All of the every single one of them.
No, listen, first of all,
what?
It's the circumstance.
To what end? Why would that? Why would you
what's
not
going
to support your
what's
own
going
team?
To what's going to define it? First of all, there are a lot of Patriots fans who over the last couple of weeks have already declared that Tom Brady's a traitor. There are people who feel that way. Then there are other people who will emerge as things get, you know, as Merck, if the quarterback thing doesn't clarify. If they get Cam Newton, people get excited to see what happens there. But if it's Andy Dalton or it's Jared Stidham or somebody else like that, it's going to be very interesting. Patriots fans are going to be here. The point of reference is this. The 49ers traded away Joe Montana. There are 49ers fans of that era who started to root for Joe Montana because they were so upset with the 49ers for giving away their GOAT in favor of Steve Young, and they never fully embraced Steve Young. It'll be that dynamic. That is definitely going to happen. The best thing that he did, though, was you know, it's highly unlikely that you're going to see a Patriots-Buccaneers Super Bowl. He's removed himself from that. But, man, if he did a Brett Favre type of thing and stayed in the division or, you know, who knows, maybe by next year he'll be a New York Jet. But as it is, you guys are sleeping on the fact that if you're 30 and you spend – it's, again, it's the Kobe Bryant thing. You saw the outpouring with Kobe, because guys of a certain age grew up and that was their idol. That was their legend. That was their hero. Those hooks sink deep. It's why the Chargers, I think, are going to do whatever they can now to get Tua. I think they're going to get Tua because they're desperate to get Tua so that they can start this entire new generation built around the young lefty, and 10-year-old kids will blink and 15 years later, they'll be celebrating like Patriots fans did with Tom Brady, our guy Tua. When that happens at a young age, look at you with you were off in London, England. Look at you with your Miami Dolphins sweatshirt to this day. It's not because of the Dolphins, it's because of Dan Marino.
Right, but Dave, the thing that Brady said on the call on his interview with Stern today was that he knew it was his decision. He knew that was his last season in New England. It doesn't feel like the Montana situation where the 49ers shipped him out because Steve Young was waiting in the wings and they were like, we feel like this is the best option for us. Brady was more complicit in making that decision than the Patriots were. So I don't necessarily think that the fans are as aggrieved as the 49ers fans 20 odd years ago would be about the same type of situation.
I think he's more or less hinted at the fact that he knew that Belichick is not nostalgic, and Brady did not get, and Tom Brady, if anybody in the history of professional sports had the right to say, I'll determine when I walk away from the Patriots, it's his call to do it. And
I think I get what you're saying. I think I just don't like the hypothetical. I think your hypothetical is impossible to reconcile. Like, there's no way that fans of the Patriots are going to have their team in the Super Bowl and root for them to lose. Right. It's just not going to happen.
Like, this doesn't make sense.
I don't know.
About the season,
they have the most Lombardis in the history of the league.
Will the team will
Tom Brady, if he's not playing
season,
their team?
Yeah, will they during the season? Will they check in on Buccaneers scores and root on Tom Brady? Probably. It's fine to have a team in the NFC that you're like, yeah, I want those Bucs to do well because of Tom Brady. But if it came to Super Bowl Sunday in Tampa, by the way, next year, I don't imagine that Patriots fans are going to be like, okay, we rocked up to Tampa. I guess we've got to show our respect to Tom. That just doesn't make any sense.
Well, the pushback on that I give you again is, then what you're really celebrating is we got good coaching, and that's unsatisfying.
The best coaching, not just good coaching.
System. You're rooting is we got the best system. Bill Belichick.
Well, no,
we
no,
can
no,
put
no,
in
no,
this QB
no.
and we still
Dave,
win.
Dave,
what we were rooting for 20 years was on some level an illusion. We thought Tom Brady was the GOAT. In fact, it really is just this system.
Dave, I'll make it very personal for you. You live 2,800 miles from Heinz Field, yet you and your children root for the Steelers. That's what you do. You root for the Steelers. You don't root for Big Ben. You don't root for Troy Polamalu. You don't root for James Harrison. You root for the Steelers. You are connected to that franchise emotionally. And that's why you have passed it on to your children, who have no connection to it whatsoever outside of you. That's it. There's no reason for them to cheer for it. Just because one guy out of 53 every single season, even if he is the greatest player in the history of that franchise, in the history of the league for that matter, moves thousands of miles away to play football, they're still Patriots fans. That is still that connection to that city, or maybe to their sibling or their parent or their grandparent or their city or their state. For whatever reason, it's the old Seinfeld bit. I mean, essentially, we're rooting for laundry. I mean, that's really what it is. You have this emotional connection with a team
That's
not
right.
Not so much the player.
That's exactly right. And I also think, though, in the era of free agency, I think we all grew up, not spaghetti, but the three of us grew up in, we at least can recall before free agency, the age of free agency really took over all of sport. And those loyalties aren't as dyed in the wool of the jerseys that you mentioned. People, I mean, research and so on indicates that younger fans vibe towards the individual players more than right. they do the brand.
I agree with
than
that the completely.
Brand. And so I think if you're 30 years old and you're maybe smack dab in the middle of the hub there up in New England, you might still be like, Tom Brady's my guy. I'm not rooting against him. I'm not, wait, I got, did Jared Stidham? Jared Stidham? No way. Tom's my guy. He gave me so many great memories. I just think that that's an emotional reaction that's,
I think that's
completely
more for
plausible.
The people that don't live in New England. I think that's for the fans that are in LA yeah. that became Patriot fans because of Tom Brady, because we didn't have a team there for 25 years. Those are the Patriot fans you're speaking to,
but
I think, that aren't in New England.
You don't have to make that decision very often, because it is, you can still be a Patriots fan and you can be a Tom Brady fan. And for now, that might mean that you support the Buccaneers occasionally, or, you know, on a week to week basis. But also, it's only going to be for 1 or 2 years anyway. And then, like, when Tom Brady leaves the Buccaneers, those people who became Patriots fans for 20 years because they loved watching Tom Brady do what he did at Foxborough and win all those rings aren't going to be like, well, because he played those, you know, 28 games in Tampa. Now I'm a Buccaneers fan, and that's what I'm about. That's just not, I don't think that's going to stick.
No, yeah, all right. I don't want to belabor it. I don't think you're a Bucs fan per se. You're a Tom Brady guy is the thing. The TB remains the same, but it's the QB wearing the 12 that you care about. It's not the,
I
it's
would
not
say
the team is my point.
To not belabor it, I would put it this way. I think there are just as many, if not more, Patriot fans that have schadenfreude toward Brady and want to see him fail and want to prove their team right for letting him go because
he's
42, as there are, hey, I love Tom. He's the reason why I'm a Patriots fan. I'm going to move with him to Tampa. Because the thing about Tampa is, you know, it's fleeting. You know, it's like, okay, well, he's going to be there for a year, maybe two. Like, it's hard to invest in that when the timing is so limited. You know what I mean? I think you'd really have to be a Tom Brady person.
I agree with that. And then I'll try to, my final point on it is just that, correct. If they are 13-3 with Andy Dalton, there will be a sense of vindication if Tom Brady is having any sort of struggles down in Florida while their local brand continues to thrive. But the other side of that will emerge, just as when Steve Young was like, yeah, he's putting up big numbers and everything, but he ain't taking care of business in January. We miss our guy. If Tom does something special in Tampa and they are anything less than a top seeded team, if they're losing the division to the Bills, there's going to be a real sense of what have you done, Belichick, and things will flip against the Patriots, right. At Belichick specifically, but the Patriots as an organization. Anyhow, money, completely random. Well, not too random, because I just wanted to get your thoughts on something here. I think it matters in sports, obviously, who you beat and even who you lose to. And I think that no matter how much people have tried to diminish the Patriots' 20-year run here, when they got the Super Bowls, the weird aspect about the Belichick-Brady dynasty is that they lost to Eli Manning twice, and Flacco was a bugaboo for them, and like Nick Foles beat them. But for the most part, you look at like, wow, that rally against the Falcons, and you know, going head with Peyton, and yeah, all of that,
many years.
And so now I'm struggling to connect this back to basketball and Eddie Spaghetti's jersey there. But like Larry Holmes is one of the great heavyweights of all time. His problem was, his greatest rival in his run as champ was Jerry Cooney. Yeah, and then he fights Muhammad Ali when Muhammad Ali is.
Dave, yeah. I'm gonna hang up and listen. As they
it's
say,
it's noon. Jeez, I gotta go. Okay, well you right. gotta go. Handsome, you go. We'll wrap it up.
See you guys later.
Thank handsome.
Take care.
Be well. Bye. We'll wrap it up here, money, real quick. But also, I think that the Patriots had some legitimate competition and they had some obviously iconic victories going into Arrowhead a couple of years ago, stands out more recently. I think also the other GOAT, if you were to do, you know, everybody's doing their.
Well, here, wait, real quick. I'll touch on that. I, to me, what the Patriots were able to do for 20 years is arguably the most remarkable thing in sports. As every other football franchise where parity reigns supreme and free agency, because you better get your, it is the number one. And I do not fault players for this one bit. There is no loyalty from the individual because your career could be over in a snap and you have got to go get the most money you possibly can. And the Patriots, God knows, saw a ton of premier players in their primes, before their primes, leave for more money that they weren't willing to pay, and that they were able to stay on top, to me is arguably the greatest accomplishment in sports. This 20-year run that includes
it really is.
And it's not, to me, it's to some degree, it's not close. It's crazy what they were able to do.
I completely agree with you. And I think that is I don't want to put it in melodramatic terms, but that is what I'm getting at. The gathering storm for Patriots fans is how you're going to reconcile what the shakeout is. Come, let's assume we have a full season and everything else, what you're going to be thinking on New Year's Day, what you're going to be thinking on Super Bowl 55, depending on how those two teams break, because it really, dynasty doesn't exactly apply in the traditional sense here. It's two guys. It's Belichick, it's Brady, and everything else was a moving part around it, along with Robert Kraft. So, but my point is it ties back. It's fun to, you know, over the last half century, if you were, everybody's doing their Mount Rushmore this or their top three that or their top five, whatever. And, you know, we've talked here about what if we started a whole new Hall of Fame, a whole new Hall of All, the greatest athletes in American sports history. The first guy in wouldn't be Tom Brady because there's enough pushback for Joe Montana and Gretzky maybe. But I think, well, not Americans, North American sports, but, you know, I'll certainly stand up for 66 and Boston people will push for Bobby Orr. I think the one guy who clearly would go in is Michael Jordan. And as I look at Michael Jordan, the thing that stands out is it's funny that in the 90s, it kind of flips that the 80s Celtics had a much more rugged path to get to the finals to play the Showtime Lakers. And then as Jordan emerges and the Lakers play those Bulls in the first Michael Jordan title, then the West emerges. And it's been that way. It's been a dominant conference for a long time. Now, 30 years, the West is almost always a much better conference than the East in the NBA. But when Jordan would get to the finals, those finals matchups that he had six times over were all legit. There was no, wow, how'd that team slip through? Like the Rockets playing the Celtics in the 80s. I mean, there was like this, wow, they beat, wow, that Lakers team with Vlade was pretty good by record at least, and it's probably the worst of the bunch. And that Chaz Barkley Suns team and the Portland team and the twice over Jazz and so on.
Anyway,
to me, things broke just right by the sports gods for Michael Jordan, that he happened to be retired. I know we've had this conversation, but just update me very quickly because I'm going to do some what if stuff coming up here. Do you think that Houston Rockets team, especially to me, the 95 team, even though it had the worst record regular season because they swap out Otis Thorpe
or
Drexler. I think Drexler, Kenny the Jet, Bob Horry, Akeem, I think Mario Elie, I think that team beats that Bulls team. How say you?
Well, I mean, I'll just put it, the guy never lost, you know, I mean, in anything. Like that's the thing to me is once he started winning, it was just this indomitable will that he was able to create and also create for his teammates. And I think obviously if he doesn't leave, you assume, you know, that Horace Grant comes back maybe, or, you know, and I don't know how the whole Rodman thing shakes out. It's just kind of,
I don't think Big Shot Bob, I mean, I'm sorry. I don't think Ho Grant goes back no matter what.
I don't know. You know what I mean? Like if you're defending your title and you're thinking about becoming the Celtics of the 60s, why wouldn't you? It's like, hey, we have a chance to become the greatest team in the history of professional sports.
To your point, money.
Yeah,
money.
True. But basketball, I think, is a little bit different. And the Bulls were making so much money then And remember, they gave Scottie Pippen a huge contract at the time, even though it came to be one of the worst contracts. But they were like, hey, you want to be the highest paid player on the team? Okay, here it is. So they were willing to pay those guys. That's just why I can't come around to the idea that, oh, yeah, the Olajuwon, you know, Rockets would have beat them. Well, no, because Michael just didn't lose. Like, it was the only team I've ever watched where, like, I never felt like they were going to lose in the playoffs. You would watch and things would get weird and they're playing Indiana in the conference finals and it's game seven and they're down double digit points. And it's not like, oh boy, this is the end of it. It's like, no, you know, Michael's going to do something crazy and he's going to score 10 points in 70 seconds and they'll win the game. And that's what happens. And that's, to me, just what would have happened in the finals. They would have faced those teams. They would have been brutal, knockdown, drag out wars like the Sun series, like the Jazz series. And the Bulls would emerge victorious because that's just what Michael Jordan did. And there was, you know, no matter if it was at North Carolina or if it was at, you know, with Chicago, that's just kind of the way, especially once they got rolling, that it always played out. And that's what made him, you know, in that conversation is, like you just said, if they did a Hall of Fame for athletes of everything, why he very well could be the number one pick for everybody, because you never had a doubt that he was going to win the game. And I don't know if there's ever been another player that you felt like that when the game was on the line.
It's very interesting to me, that subject specifically. And I'm with you. I was in Chicago. I was up on the north side pretty much through the 90s. And so I was eyewitness to that air of inevitability. You always felt like they were going to do it. But the thing that would puncture it is, before it really gets crazy, before it really gets rolling, is Jordan in feet. I mean, the vibe was you are going to be hard-pressed to take down the Bulls. But remember, they had two. Then that 62-win Suns team rolls in, and maybe because of intimidation, they drop the first two in Phoenix. But then they win two out of three in Chicago. They go back to Phoenix, and, you know, Jordan dumps it into Ho Grant, who makes that kick out to John Paxson, and he hits the three. Man, I think you can make a case, and in fact, I'm trying to make that case, that three ball doesn't drop. I don't know what happens in game seven of that year.
But again, he never lost.
Yeah, you're right.
Lost, you know, think about the Lakers, right? The Lakers win that first game of their first finals, and everyone's like, yep, see, not ready for primetime. They finally got over the Pistons. And granted, look, Worthy got hurt. That was a banged up Laker team. And if you talk to Worthy, he believes that they would have won that series had he not gotten banged up. But to me, it's like, okay, we lost the first game. And then from there on out, it was a rout. And I think anytime, like that, you know, you think about, I think it was the second Jazz. I want to say it was the second Jazz finals where they lost game one at home. Game two was shaky, I believe, or something like that. It was a tipping point, and they would remind you, don't question us. And I do believe it's one of those teams that the proverbial flip the switch has been attached to. And I don't know if I remember ever hearing it as much. I'm sure it probably existed before, but it really felt like that particular sports cliche was applied to that team. Because they would always find themselves in a little bit of trouble. And then all of a sudden you blink your eyes and they've gone from being down seven to up five. And it's like, oh yeah, that's right. They just turned it on.
I it's funny. Cause like I say, being there in Chicago and watching all their games, regular season and through the playoffs, it would be in the postseason. It did feel like, all right, the script's getting a little formulaic here. All right, we're coming up on the end of act two here, guys. Yeah. You're down 14. What are we gonna do? All right, yeah. Let's get to the end where you pull off the last minute. Yeah, right. That it really did have that vibe to it. Anyway, Money, as always, appreciate you taking the time for us, pal.
You got it.
And AM 570 or iHeartRadio. Listen, stop. To Money and Petros chopping it up for your pleasure here in these barren days. Not much to talk about, but somehow we end up filling an hour at least every time. So thank you, Matt Money Smith. Eddie Spaghetti, awfully quiet today.
I was just listening to you guys, you know, do your thing. I was enjoying the conversation from uniform.
I thought you were going to weigh in, Eddie. I thought you were going to weigh in on the 94 finals with old Starks, the man whose jersey you're donning right now, and how he ruined your chance at an NBA championship, Eddie, just giving the freaking ball to Pat Ewing.
I know. My two points from this podcast that I would make, or one with the Knicks, is the Knicks were not a good basketball playing team. They were just a team beloved by New York. And they just loved Anthony Mason and Charles Oakley and Ewing and but they weren't as skilled as the Rockets or the Bulls. Exactly. So no, I don't think they probably overshot what their expectations were. And then back to the Brady, the Bucks versus Patriots thing. I mean, if Eli Manning became a Jaguar last season to play underneath Coughlin and they went to a Super Bowl versus the Giants, I'm not rooting for Eli Manning and the Jaguars. I'm rooting for the laundry. It's simple as that.
Well, you saw, whether you saw it or not, Phil Simms and Jeff Hostetler, that's why this is unique. This is there is the period in history for a long-standing pro franchise, the only success it ever had was with one guy playing quarterback. That's the difference. People keep pointing out to me like, "Oh, what about Lemieux?" Like, well, that's not a comparable situation. Lemieux didn't leave. Would you have turned? I wasn't rooting against the Penguins. I just became apathetic when Lemieux retired for a couple of years. I absolutely could see like, yeah, Thrill's kind of gone without TB in there. I could absolutely see that happening. The other thing money is too, the other side of that coin is, and then we'll wrap it up. The thing with the Jordan legacy and all that and the inevitability, if that bad foul doesn't get called against Scottie Pippen on Hubert Davis in game five, and they go to it, if the Bulls go in 94, when they were a good team, if they go to
Pippen the final, was arguably he was one of the if he had a legitimate shot at the MVP that year. Pippen was unfreaking believable that season.
They win that one and they go to the finals and beat that Rockets team. Then now we're talking about the same sort of thing. Like, so Jordan's great, but is he definitely the greatest of all time if they turn around the year he retires and win the title?
Yeah, I think that like then my pushback on that would be that's the Jordan effect, right? And the idea that you make your teammates better, that you share whatever this is that you have inside of you, this air of inevitability and this indomitable will that was put upon, you know, a young guy from Central Arkansas when he showed up and that cast and Tony Kukoc from Croatia and hardening him up to be, you know, he was considered a soft Euro and he becomes this, you know, ass kicker out on the court as well. And so I do think he still would have gotten some credit for that. I think Phil Jackson, now that would have launched him, I think, to a different level. That's right. If that team had ended up winning a championship. But yeah, that was an absolute BS call on Pip against Hubert Davis. God, I'll never forget where I watched it. And this is a funny, I'll end with this. I was going to Pepperdine at the time. So I was in school, living in Malibu. And one of my roommates, I lived in a house right on PCH, and my roommate Dave was working at Johnny's Pizza. I am parking cars at the Chart House at night, and I'm looking to scrape together any money I can. So I would go see him for lunch and dinner and eat basically for free. You know, he would float me some extra slices and stuff like that and garlic knots. So I watched that game with John Cusack at Johnny's Pizza.
Wow.
And, you know, Cusack's a Chicago guy, and he was sitting at the counter with D.B. Sweeney and me and a couple other people watching that game. And he lost his freaking mind when they called that foul. It was funny of all the places, not a bar, but this tiny little pizza joint in the strip mall on PCH is where I saw that thing go down.
Ah, good times, man. That's a fun story. Well, not for a Bulls fan at the end of that.
Whatever.
Things worked out pretty well for the Bulls fans overall. Money, as always, like I say, great thanks to you, fella. And
you got it.
I said, I don't know how we're going to make it 20 minutes, and we did over an hour again. I apologize for that. Appreciate the time, Money. Eddie right, Spaghetti, everybody. Great job by you, as always. Handsome Hank. And thank you, the listener. We'll talk to you later on. Until then, stay safe and sound. And it's been a thin slice of heaven.